report that the snow's moving out, so in the next few hours, hopefully.
We're good.
You're off.
Good morning. I'd like to call the Pension Committee meeting for February 26th to order. It's now 10:05. First item on the agenda is the approval of the November 19th, 2014 minutes. Are there any questions or concerns? They were distributed earlier. Nope. Hearing none, then they'll stand approved. The next item is the investment analysis for the quarter ended December 31st, 2014. And Mr. Schoen is here from Pierce Park Group to discuss that.
Okay. And we're doing the pension now, right?
Yes.
And then the OPEB. Okay, yep. Just to make sure. Okay. So if you just turn to tab one, just a quick overview of what occurred in the markets and the economy last year. This is page one, first tab, tab one. The rural gross domestic product, that's inflation adjusted, grew at 2.6% annual rate in the fourth quarter. That's good, sustained growth. It's not robust, but it's good, sustained, and significantly greater than almost all the rest of the world. And that's a theme you'll see manifest itself in investment returns also. Oil prices plunged during the quarter, went down again in January, came back up a little bit, and it's going back down. I think you might have seen the article that Jim Arcondis wrote on that. The labor market continued to strengthen with unemployment down to 5.6%. U.S. equities, although volatile, topped the international equities once again. It's been a theme for quite a few years now. Fixed income did better than we would have expected. Interest rates came down, and therefore, you know, I got the yield, but you got some capital appreciation on that. But just remembering, as I always mention, the lower that yield does, although that helped it last year, now you're starting out this year at even a lower yield, so expectations of fixed income returns are even lower going forward than they were at the beginning of last year. And inflation-sensitive assets struggled, especially in the second half of the year, really driven, you know, with the oil price decline, but other with the slackening of the economies around the world, the demand for commodities has lessened up. So you do not have investments in commodities directly. You can indirectly. Some of your investment managers may have some holdings in some oil companies, but you don't have direct investment in commodities. It's one of the reasons why I don't like commodities as an explicit allocation, because they're just so volatile. You know. So that's the overview. If you want to go to page four. For asset class returns, and the blue bar is for the year, the gray is for the quarter, you can see that the U.S. equity significantly outperformed international and emerging markets. It was one of the few places that was positive last year, and it was even more positive than we expected. It was, you know, historically, U.S. equities do about 10 to 10 a quarter, and actually adjusting that for a lower inflation right now than historic inflation, you would expect average to be more like 9 to have the same real rate of return. U.S. equities are actually up 12.6. It's another reason why we don't market time, because you just never know who's going to be the winner on a shorter term basis. International equities were negative for the quarter and for the year. That's driven by two things. One is that because their economies are slowing up, their stock markets at the local level did not do as well as ours, although at the local level, they're actually positive. But then when you take into consideration the currency, because you have to take those earnings and bring them over to the U.S., that made the net return for a U.S. investor to be negative in both those spaces, international equities and emerging markets. You have some exposure in those areas, but you have less exposure than the average plan out there. It'll be one of the reasons why you'll see that your performance relative to your peer groups is still quite outstanding. Maybe I won't use the word outstanding. Very, very good. You set a tough mark when you use the word outstanding. And as I mentioned, U.S. bonds. Your bonds did not do as well as a benchmark because you are purposely and intentionally more conservative in your bonds. You have a shorter duration, shorter maturity bond portfolio. Okay, so when interest rates go down, as they did, went to as well. But as they've gone back up this last month, then you've been better protected in the down markets. Okay, and the down fixed income markets. And then just touch on the one area that did do well in the inflation sets of areas were REITs. You do not have an explicit allocation to REITs, You do not for two reasons. One is because the overall budget of Sussex County is very dependent upon the real estate industry. Okay, so if you're very dependent upon that, and you have then your portfolio dependent upon that, you sort of doubled down your position. So we had made that recommendation many years ago, and you moved away from it. Now that was very beneficial last year because REITs were the big losers in the equity markets. This year they were the big winners. This 2014 they were big winners. But now we're starting to see, as interest rates are going back up, REITs have gone negative relative to the other equities. So, okay, so that's the overall economy in the market. I'll just touch on one thing on page 5. You can see the large cap, mid cap, and small cap. All of them were positive for the year and for the quarter, but for the year, again, that's the blue bars, large and mid cap were big winners over the small cap, significantly stronger returns. You, by intent, you stay neutral on that. So when small cap did better, you had sort of benchmark-like allocations. As they went up and got out higher allocations, you moved a little bit out of small cap and into the other areas, okay? And that rebalancing benefited you because this past year, large and mid cap were the big winners. Now, this past quarter, small cap was the winner, but it shows you how much small cap lagged for the first three quarters, okay? I'll stop. Is that sufficient for the overall market in the economy? Okay. On to page, tab 2. So at first report of the year, we like to talk about the accomplishments of the plan, give you a little idea of what Pierce Park's been up to, and then talk about the fund itself. You actually accomplished much in 2014 on the pension fund. You had manager searches for the Fidelity Low Price Stock Fund, replacing that. You eliminated that, adding both the first time around the extended market index. That's a small cap. Excuse me for a second. The small cap index, and then later in the year, the rest of Fidelity you replaced with the Vanguard Mid Cap Value Index. This also helped lower your fees rather considerably. Also, you received education on fixed income, and you signed a new investment policy statement that reflected the allocations that you see below. Pierce Park, for 2014, we hired an additional research analyst, Sean Yeager. We hired a new office administrator, Libby Roccio, who, if you haven't, I guess you just talked to her yesterday, yes. We've also reinvested back into additional data, both from Thomson Reuters and MSCI. We've done equity evaluation analysis. We did some enhancement of our performance report. And we hired by three new clients, as you can see, Teamsters, Monroeville OPEB Fund, and Warrington Township, which is in Pennsylvania. Our goals for 2015 is fixed income education. We're taking to some of our other clients some of the ideas that you already brought, and I will tip my hat to Dave on the idea, which I'll say I didn't fully embrace when he suggested it years ago, but it actually makes a lot of sense. It's just laddered bond, conservative approach. They mature as you need them. And now as we're seeing more and more of our clients who have negative cash flows because their benefit payments are exceeding their contributions. You know, we're taking your thoughts there. And just yesterday at one of our counties in Pennsylvania, we're saying, take a piece of it and do this with it. So tip my hat to you, Dave. Assisting all of our clients, including yourself, on just what are some of the options in what's going to be a very difficult investment environment over the next 5 to 10 years to meet your actuarial assumed returns? You know, you took a very positive step by lowering your assumptions. I think that was a very good move. And yet it's still going to be tough to meet that 7.5 just because of, you know, what fixed income alone will do and equities, you know, we think will have lower than average returns. We're continuing to invest in technology and infrastructure. We're helping our clients with OPEB, GASB. Now, just as you went through GASB 67 and 68 for the pension, when we get to the OPEB, GASB has now done their exposure draft that these are going to show up on your financial statements. It is going to happen just like it was on the pension side. I think it's just a timing whether it's going to be 2016, 2017, or 2017, 2018. I think that's probably about the only, it's going to follow very much the form of that. It's not, From a credit rating agency perspective, I think it'll have very little, if no, impact on yourselves because you're so well funded in those plans. In fact, I think it'll highlight that your OPEB fund is probably one of the best funded in the country. I've said it before, but I still say it. You know, I'm still seeing some starting to say, you know, should we put money aside for that? But now OPEB's almost going to necessitate to do that. Yep. Not legally, but they're going to want to do that. So, but some of the same things we worked through on some of the supplemental required information for your financials for your pension, then those will be necessary for the OPEB fund also. Client survey, we intend to get that out in another quarter. We always like people to say good things about us, but what we want you to do is tell us, you know, anything also that if there's things that we can do to enhance, we want to know that, okay? And then an enhanced website, which we launched last week, so if you're so inclined, you can take a look at that. For the plan itself, as of the end of December, you were at $71.6 million. That was a $4.1 million gain for the quarter and a $5.7 million gain for the year. Okay, quarterly returns were, fourth quarter was 2.1 and year-to-date was 8.5. I think that was the second highest of all of our clients. We have 35 clients. And the only one that was higher was a corporation who purposely went into long bonds. So they managed for they were immunizing their liability. So manager changes, as I mentioned earlier, you terminated Fidelity, added two Vanguard funds. You had very strong returns for 2014. Your peer group, you ranked in the top 3% for the year. That's the nationwide universe that we subscribe to. And you beat your benchmark by 2.2%, which is a very strong outperformance to your benchmark. And your fees have come down also from 56 basis points to 52 basis points, savings of around $28,000 a year. Okay. Looking ahead, I just threw in there, you know, you just might want to consider increasing your equity targets to 65. I know you went through that process last year, decided to do it on the OPEB, not the pension, because of the way the state does it. But I'll always throw that in there, and then you can always decide to reject it. So just a couple other quick things on the pension, because if you go to page 20 for a moment. Now, if there's anything that people want me to delve into further, I'd be glad to, but on page 20 on the upper right-hand side, you'd see that your blue square, that's your plan. The way to read that is in the up markets, relative to your policy index, you do about 100% of that. So if your policy index is up 10, you do 10 on average. Yeah. Okay. But when it's been down, you've only been down, I'll say, roughly 40% of that. So when the policy index has been down 10, you've only been down 4. So it's very unusual that you'll see somebody do that well defensively in a down market and yet do equal to the benchmark on the up market. So it's working the way you want to. And I'd say, especially knowing your conservative nature, that you'd rather protect a little bit more in the down market. Well, you've actually protected a lot in the down market, yet given up nothing in the up markets. So, okay, and then just for the individual managers on page 21. DuPont Capital, they have, you know, if you recall, when you first hired them, the first couple quarters, they struggled a little bit. But they've done very well since then. They've outperformed their benchmark for the last 3 years by 90 basis points. I'll round it to 1%. That's what you're looking for. You're not looking for home runs, Alan. It's just pretty consistent outperformance, hopefully. And we're seeing that quarter after quarter, most quarters, that they've been outperforming. And for the year, they're at 15.5 versus 13.7. So very good year for them. Fidelity low price, we just put them in there because you had them for most of the quarter. You don't have any assets left with them anymore. But you can see in the fourth quarter, actually, your timing happened to work just right. You got out of them, half of it back in middle of third quarter and the other in the half fourth quarter. In fourth quarter, they were only up 2% versus their benchmarks, which were up 9.7 and 6.1. And the funds that you put them in instead, the Vanguard Extended Market was up 6.5 and the mid-cap value was up 7. So timing happened to work out well for you. It doesn't always, but it just happened to work out well that when you got on with, it's right when they went down and the others went up. So yeah, you always got to celebrate that. And then that's why we waited. Pardon me?
That's why we waited.
Exactly.
We're that good, right, Dave?
Yeah. And then Wilmington Trust, doing what you're expected to do, just matching your benchmark and just a little bit more. So that's it for the pension. Unless you had any other. Actually, let me go to 31 just for the state, since that's 60% of your portfolio. So for the quarter, they were up 1.2 versus the benchmark of 1.7, so they were behind for the quarter. But for the year, they were 8% versus 6.1, so 190 basis points of outperformance. 3 years, 12 versus 10.7, 5. So they very consistently have outperformed. I think your combination of what you have, you know, with them roughly 60% of the portfolio and the other pieces you've layered around it, worked out very, very well for you. I would not, now that you made that change with Fidelity, I wouldn't touch a thing.
Gina, at any point did we want to discuss maybe increasing the equity percentage to 65%? Because interest rates at some point will increase, and that's going to be it will be an impact on the bonds that we're carrying. I mean, it's only 5% more, but might be able to eke out a little better return. Potentially. Of course, this is what Michael just brought up. I mean,
right.
Is that something to discuss, or you just
want to? I mean, if you guys want to discuss it, I'm okay with where we are at the 60%, just because we do have a little more risk in the state pool, which is 60% of our fund.
That's
and
true.
It's has been performed very well, and we are very protected in the down market. And just to take that extra step, the way we performed and we've done very well.
Yeah.
Change something that's been working for us.
Yeah. The reason I mention it, it's almost certain that the interest rates will rise. I mean, that's the only reason I'm saying it. And I know what you mean. We're doing well with our current, setup. But yeah, it's fine.
Let me just add one thing that I'd say with probably all the rest of my clients, I'd probably give them a little harder shove. In this case, although I mention it because to get to 7.5. Generally, I would say you need to be at 65% equities. Having said that, the state many times will go 70, 75% equity. Sometimes they'll go down to 50. So their benchmark is 60, but in application, they march it up some too. So I wouldn't give you the same nudge that I would others there. So I think your points are very well taken. So that's my point.
Do you know what percentage they were as of December 31? Equities, or is it might be here somewhere?
Let me see here. So if you go to page 32, mm-hmm. you'll see that what they called the total equity was 52, but then their private equity was another 15, actually and a half, so that's about 68. And then hedge funds, we sort of look as sort of half and half. So they're at about 70% right now. So your overall portfolio actually is at 65 right now.
Right.
So, yeah.
Do you rebalance at all, or do you rebalance among the funds, or?
So what happened when?
Can't remember.
So when?
No, we would come the quarterly meetings. If we need to rebalance, we would at this point. But last year we were looking at the OPEB rebalancing weekly. But we stopped that because it seems to be, because we're no longer putting in a bunch of money at one time, pulling it all out. We're keeping everything pretty flat. Mm-hmm. Next time I expect that we would rebalance is in June when we make the larger contribution. Once we've spent, because we're now spreading it all out, and we'll see what we have left before the end of the fiscal year, and then we'll make a big contribution at that point.
Okay. So, and if I may decide a little bit, on the OPEB, when we were doing the discretionary part of it, What we would do is, if at the end of the quarter it was more than 1% off, we would rebalance, okay? And if during the course of the quarter it was more than 3%, we would rebalance, okay? But that was just on the OPEB fund. The pension fund, for the most part, what you've done, you've stayed pretty tight to your targets anyway, but as you've needed money, that was the time to rebalance. Now, in a quarterly meeting, if we see there's been a dramatic change, you know, we'll come to you and say, look, we think you need to rebalance between us, take some out of equities or take some out of fixed, whoever's been performing better. But, okay.
Do you agree with all our current bond, as far as the bonds, do you agree with that, the way we're going presently with our investments? Can anything be improved there as far as potential interest rate increases or anything?
Well, tough question to answer.
It's hard to say.
Yeah. So if interest rates go up, I'm going to sound like a comment. If interest rates go up and they go up quickly, I would be as conservative as you are, okay? If they're not going to go up, or if they're going to go up slowly, then you could have a little longer maturity. But I think when you do, this has worked pretty well with you. I don't think I'd tinker with anything. You know, I would leave that as it is. You know, and by having conservative bonds, one of the things about more aggressive bonds is they will, over time, should give better returns. You know, if you have more in corporates and more in mortgages and asset backs. However, they take on more what you call equity beta risk. So when the economy goes down, those bonds may not do as well. So, and the really conservative, the treasuries and the agencies will protect better in a down market, an up interest market, or a down equity market, excuse me. So.
We're about 20% corporate, correct? Or age 29.
Yeah. They're allowed to go up to 50 at this point. We did widen that a little bit.
Okay.
But yeah, they're only, you know, total, you know, 80. They're 80% treasuries and agencies, so they do manage it rather conservatively. And you know, I talked to Dom, you know, about once a month, and you know, he continues to manage it the way he has for a long time. And you know, I like his approach. They're a firm that I would go out, and if another client of mine said, you know, look for bond managers for us, Wilmington Trust would be one of the ones on our list for them to look at, for sure.
Sounds good.
I was just wondering if we had a little bit more going to corporate, it might help a little bit, but had a little higher percentage on the corporate.
Think I was hearing that out of Dave Baker.
Well, I mean, when they're in, you know, they're all investment grade.
Yeah. So they're allowed to go up to 50 right now. So you've given them the latitude. They've chosen not to. So they've chosen to be more conservative relative. So it was just last year you widened that band. It used to be a max of 25. And then we said, you know, we talked about, hey, let's give them a little bit more latitude. So I think you've given them the latitude to do it. They've made a decision not to go there at this point. So in their opinion, that they'd rather, you know.
Well, it might not be worth it, too, if the short-term bonds.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah, they look at it and say, how much more return can we get versus how much more risk do we take with that? And they've decided to, you know, right now that's where they want to be. So I think they're your singles hitters, and that's what they've done very consistently for you and at a good, very, very competitive price. So.
Okay. Ready for OPEB. Go ahead.
Okay.
Yep.
So, OPEB on page 35, we implemented our models. You know, you turn it over as discretionary consulting to us, and that got implemented, I think, around February, mid-January. It wasn't right at the beginning of the year, but close thereafter. We made a number of changes. You also had your investment policy statement where you did change that at late in the year to move from 60% equities to 65% equities, which increased your domestic equity targets from 48 to 51, international from 12 to 14, decreased your bond targets, and then put 1%. Before, the old investment policy statement didn't reflect cash, but the reality is you have cash. Sometimes you used to have a lot of cash and then drag it down. Now, the way Gina's working now is to trying to keep that cash right around that 1% and make the contributions match up with the outflows. So that way you don't get the drag of having too much cash. And all of a sudden you get, like, say, 5% in. You got to go, do you sit on that cash for, you know, and just drag it down during the course of the year, you know, as you need it? Or do you invest it, but then 2 or 3 months later when you need it, you have to take it out, and you might take it out when the market's down. So now you've timed it up, you know, very nicely on that. The fund now is at $30.3 million, now being the end of December, fourth quarter return of $802,000, and the 2014 gain of $1.8. Fourth quarter return of $2.8, and for a total year, $6.3. And as I mentioned, your 65% target, implemented target, did go in place. It was late in the year. You know, it was like mid-December.
December.
Yeah. Very strong peer group performance, strong benchmark performance. But we have two funds on the watch list already. Just put those names aside, because I want to show your returns, and then I'll talk about Thornburg, because you're going to look at their returns, and you're going to say, Michael, how could you possibly have them on the watch list? Okay. So looking ahead, looking for a replacement for Target, you know, well, we would look for, you know, assuming you might want us to do that. Thornburg, continue to monitor, and then GASB, the exposure draft. Now, if you go to page 41, you'll see that at that 2.8% return, that ranked your fund in the top 13% in the nation. So I'd like to say that Consulting Plus actually worked. And so
did well.
Can them. And for the year, you're now actually, you know, above average, which this fund has struggled to get there for a long time, you know. And actually for the 2 years, you're now in the 38th percentile, so you're above average. At a time when higher equity allocations did better. You know, you were only at 60%, you know, and yet over the last 2 years, you're above average. A lot of that's because, you know, some of the fund lineup changes, some of the a little lower allocation to international stocks and others, because it's not just how much you have in stocks, but what type of stocks. And as we've mentioned before, you're not into the alternatives. I see some of these really big plans out there that are heavy into the hedge funds. None of ours. We don't embrace them. And all of a sudden, CalPERS has come out and said, you know, we're going to get out of hedge funds. You know, state of Pennsylvania said, you know, somebody in the pension department, I forget which position it was, said, we should get out of hedge funds. And I'm thinking, I should never have been in the first place. They're very expensive, lack of transparency, lack of liquidity, you know. So
I don't think they're worth it. Most of them, but from what I've seen, I mean, the returns just aren't stellar. I mean, they're, you know, they can be pretty good, but they're not worth all that risk, and you don't really know what you're investing in.
Well, I was reading online today, this woman who runs a hedge fund was suing her ex-husband who ran for child support, and wanted, I think it's $1 million a month for child support for 3 children, He said, how could they possibly? She said, because the lifestyle they would have lived in if he was still married to us, that's what it would have been. But he is worth $5.5 billion. I think that tells you who's making money off the hedge funds.
Yeah, that's...
You know, the traditional investment managers, they weren't making that kind of money. The hedge fund manager, $5.5 billion. You know,
that's amazing.
Coming right out of the pension funds, going right into their pocket. So, just $1 million a month just doesn't get you what you used to. You know, it's, you know, where you guys, you know?
Amazing.
Yeah. So, and on page 43, you'll see that you outperformed your policy index by just about 60 basis points for the quarter. Now, let me take you on to page 45. And if you recall, you trimmed back your lineup. You had said, you didn't want as many funds as we had when we, you know, so that's when you went through this process and made some changes. Thornburg, okay, which was put in place on January 14th, so for the year, they were in the, you can see, did did 18.9% for the year and were in the top 1%. The top 1% for the quarter, top 1% for the year, top 1% for the 3 years, top 5% for 5 years. How could we possibly say and put them on a watch list? Thornburg used to manage $100 billion of assets, and about $60 billion were in one product of theirs, not this one, the international value product. Okay. They've had tremendous turnover at the portfolio manager level. Okay. Basically, there were two, and then it became three, and then it became back one, and now all of them are gone. The performance wasn't good, and now of the $60 billion they had roughly about 2 years ago, they have about $25 billion in that product, okay? So the firm has gone from rough approximations from $100 billion down to $65 billion. Now, that seems like a lot of money, but that's a lot of money lost. And so from our perspective, we look and say, okay, they have this global equity product. It's done fantastic. It's got $1 billion in it. They've got this other product. It's got $25 billion in it, okay? Now, as a firm, do they say, let's support this one because this one's going to go away, okay? Let's say, look, we get 25 times as much money off of this one as this one, you know, maybe we leave this one alone and just fix this one, but maybe some of the resources that would go here get diverted over there. Maybe some of the talent over here gets diverted over there. You know, if I'm running a business, I'm going, you know, yeah, I love this, but boy. So I would not make any change. We haven't seen them do that. Even performance this year to date, they're up like about 4.5%, you know, already this year to date. I mean, it's just been fantastic. But they've got to go on the watch list. I mean, that's, you know, you got to look at the qualitative side of things also. Okay. I will also add this MFS Low Vol that you just added. You didn't have it for a full quarter, but they were in the top 5%, up 4.2 for the quarter. But Target. Look at their returns. Their returns, actually, you know, 7.3 versus 9.4 for the quarter. Year to date, they outperformed their benchmark. The five-year returns, they're above. Since you hired them, they're above. However, Target is a fund that's owned by Prudential. And Prudential went out and hired five different investment management firms to manage the portfolio. Okay, and we like that concept for two reasons. One is in a small cap area. If managers get too much money, they can't continue to do what they were doing. And so they either cap off, or what they do is they always say, well, we'll cap it off at this, but then greed gets in the way, and well, we'll take a little bit more, and all of a sudden they're not a small cap manager anymore. They start becoming a bit of a mid cap manager because they can't buy enough of the small cap companies. There's just, you know, it's just not enough there to do that. So we like the idea that they had five managers so that if anyone got capped off, they could give some more money to another one, or they could hire a sixth manager. They used to have four and they went to five. And we like that, you know, if one of those managers wasn't doing as well, maybe the other one was doing better and they offset each other and they were slightly different styles and all that. Well, they sent out a proxy vote about 3 months ago and said, we want to give our board of directors of the mutual fund, every mutual fund has a board of directors, we want to give them the latitude to, you know, greater latitude. That's what it was, very nebulous. Now, well, the latitude that they did was within about a month or two, they then fired all those firms, and they hired one firm to manage the whole portfolio, and that firm is owned by Prudential. So the managers that are there, and it's not that it's necessarily a bad firm, you know, we're still doing some looking at them, but we know they go a lot more into microcaps. But it's not the firm you chose. It's not the firm we chose to put in there. And so we don't have a recommended replacement yet, because that's not a space where it's always easy to find what you were looking for. There's not a lot of good choices. But we internally, because we have a number of clients who have the target fund, we're looking at and saying, okay, what can we do with that? If you had a higher allocation than 3% in that, because we had some clients that had 4 or 5, we took just a little bit off and moved into the mid cap. But since you're already down to 3%, I wouldn't bother with that. And we're not the discretionary consultant, so we can't go ahead and do something there anyway, but we are looking at that for our other clients, and if you'd like us to, we can look for alternatives for you in that space.
I would, yeah, next, if you could look.
Okay.
That would be great.
Yeah. Okay. all I got for you. We did include in your handout the investment policy statements, okay? Not to look over today, but it's a very good discipline once a year to review those. Now, you just redid the one back last June, but I thought maybe at the next meeting, you know, if you choose to want to read through those or glean through those, and I'll hit a couple of highlights. It's just good documented process of saying, yes, we reviewed the investment policy statement. A, we're fine with it just exactly it is, or B, you know, we'd like to make this little change. So that's why those are in there.
Anybody have any more questions for Mr. Schoen?
No.
Question about the OPEB, the GASB change. Mm-hmm. What exactly is that proposed? How will that affect us?
So right now it's a footnote statement, and it will be moving to the balance sheet in the government-wide financial statements. So where we've recorded an asset because we've always gone above mm-hmm. what our required contribution, now that liability, the actual, what we really do owe, is going to show up on our balance sheet.
Net of the assets you have against it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right. Okay. But not really at the 100% liability, right? I mean,
if we have so many assets, so where we're 80% or 70% funded in the OPEB, we're going to be showing that 30% liability on the balance sheet.
Okay. On the accrual balance mm-hmm. sheet.
Right, on the accrual, the government-wide.
Okay.
Used to be if you paid your full ARC, you showed no liability. Okay, even if your liability was this big and your assets were this big, as long as you were paying your full ARC. If you didn't, the difference between what you paid and your ARC would show as a liability, and then it would accrete interest against that each year. If you overpaid, then you would actually show an asset, but the asset would be just the difference between what your ARC is and what you put in. Now it's truly saying, what are your all-in liabilities? What do you have in assets? And the difference between the two will show up as a liability on them. But again, my opinion is that when bond rating agencies and the bond buyers, fixed income managers look at that, they will look at how well funded you are relative to everybody else, just about everybody else.
Right. And how it's going to affect us is we have always showed an asset because we've always overfunded what we were required. Mm-hmm. And now we're going to show what we really do, that 30% that's unfunded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe we'll
close that gap.
Close
the gap.
Very close to 100.
But again, just like Mr. Schoen said, is that's going to show how well funded we really are compared to everybody else.
I know I date you by quite a bit, but Michael's okay.
We're in a public meeting.
I don't date you by as much as Mr. Baker does.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Schoen. moving on, the next item is the potential impact of paramedics switching to the state pension plan. At your seat, you will see underneath the agenda, there is a spreadsheet where I've summarized what our actuary and the state's actuary has seen, looking at what would happen if our paramedics moved to the state plan. Behind that are the letters from the state pension office and their actuaries' analysis, and then our independent actuaries' analysis to make sure that what the state gave us would line up. So what I try to do is summarize it all on that one spreadsheet. So what you'll see here is in the first column, this is our current scenario. So we have an actuary liability, so a future obligation of $72 million. We have $64 million in assets. So our unfunded liability is $8.2 million. We contribute, or our required contribution is 13.5% of our gross payroll. Okay. The employees at this point do not have to contribute anything unless they were hired after January 2013. they had to do 3% of their gross. Okay, so this is our current scenario. We then had the actuaries look at three different scenarios. So what would the cost of the county if we were to buy in all past services of the pensioners, so take what they've contributed to the county's pension, and move it all to the state pension plan? Okay, that's that first column. What you will see is the state's plan offers higher replacement income and disability benefits than our plan, so our liability is going to be much higher and our pay-in's a lot higher. So looking at that second column, our liability, once we move all the paramedics out, has decreased $62,119,000. However, the cost to buy in, we would lose almost $17 million if we were to have to move that money all in. That leaves us an assets of $47.5 million. Our unfunded liability then increases to $14.6 million. So where we're about 90% funded right now, if we were to do this, we'd drop about 76% funded. Our annual required contribution, where now that we have less employees but have a higher liability, we would now have to contribute. Our annual required contribution would be 17.76% of our gross versus the 13.5. So now that we have to contribute a lot more based off of the payroll that we have. How it affects the employees if they move? If they go to the state pension plan, they would then have to contribute 7%, where right now they're either contributing 0 or 3%. What our actuary recommends, if we were to do a cost buy-in based off of the 7% contribution that the medics would have had contributed, out of that $17 million, one-third of that should be coming from the medics themselves. They should be buying in one-third of it, which would be $52,000 per medic, is how it works out. So it's not favorable for the medics as well to have to put in that much money. So that
is the 10-year buy-in?
That's the all-in buy-in. Then if you go
the
in,
all-in. So they,
right,
would,
that's,
they would still put up, oh, they're, as an alternative to this, mm-hmm, they would pay.
Right. So out of that $17 million, that's how much the buy-in would cost.
Right.
One-third of it would have to come from the individual medics. Two-thirds of it would come from the county. So two-thirds, which would be $11.3 million, would lower our assets.
Okay. Right.
And then the other $5.6 million would come straight from the medics.
So that was a recommendation of the
Aon, our actuary, yes.
Why do they want to leave the county's pension plan?
Not that they want to leave, because the legislation has changed to give them the opportunity to move, they wanted us to research it.
Mm-hmm.
And these are just the numbers. So now that we have the numbers, it gives them an opportunity to decide. It's ultimately the county's responsibility and our decision whether all the medics go or all the medics stay. But I'm just presenting the facts of what has come back.
So they all go or they all,
right,
stay?
It has to
and
be all
the
or
county's
not.
Decision, or
it is the county's decision, as you can see, because it's going to be a big cost. So moving on, I've also had them look into doing a 10-year buy-in, 10 years or 5 years. You can see what the effects are. If you look at, so the same thing here, we would have to pay $9.5 million to buy in at the state, and one-third of that would come from the medics.
So that's up front.
That would be upfront cost.
Okay. Yep. Okay.
And then you would see where our assets would decrease. Once that is factored in, we then again go from 90% funded to 83% funded. And then we would then have to contribute 16.11% versus our 13.5% required contribution. So that increases. And then we are also, just so you know, we're also required to contribute the 14.18% that's over in the no buy-in side, because that was the contribution rate for the state pension. So no matter what percentage you look at, it's higher than what we're currently paying at 13.5.
It could go up or change right. or whatever.
Right, the 14, and that's a very good point, Mr. Baker. The 14.18 is determined by the state. We have no control over their investment policies. If their fund goes down or they're not funded completely, we have to pick up that cost.
What is it for a paramedic? What are the advantages of the state plan versus ours? What are we, 25 years?
Right, and they can get 30 years. So they have better benefit at, and paying in, but that's why the cost is so much higher. And then their disability, formula. Is better.
But the disability is while they're working, right?
Or, yeah, but they can have pension disability.
Oh, that one way up. Okay.
Yeah.
It doesn't affect OPEB, huh?
It does, correct. They would still be on our health insurance side of the pension.
I think it's detrimental to the plan. I mean, increased contributions going way out and sort of hurts the plan overall for everyone.
So they'd have to go to 30 year, or they would have a minimum of 30 years before they could retire.
They get
state.
20. They
well,
can.
We're 25.
We cap them at 25. They're not capped.
Cap.
Right, we cap them at their
okay.
how much they get. Then they have an opportunity to work longer and get a higher pension after 25 at the state.
But they'd still have to work to 30. Work
correct.
30 years
right.
before they could.
That's correct.
Before they were vested, unless they were
yes, yes,
60 or
that's
something.
Correct. Right.
Well, they can presently work longer than they can work as long as they want, can't they, with the county?
Yes.
And get
it's
credit
just the
with the pension. I mean,
right. It's just the calculation that
yeah.
our pension is.
But it's capped at 25 years.
It's capped at 25 years.
Salary is not capped, though. Calculation.
Yeah.
Is their salary
yeah.
Is
right. The salary.
Yeah.
Right.
That's yeah. I think it hurts the overall plan.
Right, when you look at it and they have to contribute 7% versus not contributing anything right now, it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a. So we have to contribute 14 and they'd have to contribute 7? Wow.
Yes. So yeah, they're a third and we're two thirds.
Kind of. In a way, I think we have a better plan. I mean, because it's non contributory. I mean, I understand what Gina's saying. I mean, and I'm sure they've done their research, but.
Well, I will be releasing this information to the medics after we have met so that they do have all the information. But I just wanted you to let you know that we had that legislation that passed that allowed them. So we had this research done. And from a financial standpoint, the numbers do not work and it'd be very costly to our pension plan and would hurt all of our employees, I feel.
That's why I agree with that.
I don't see it as a big benefit for the paramedics.
I don't either.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Did you speak to anyone on the state side why the legislation, what the impetus for the legislation behind that? Or the other counties, are they so far back on their, or less than for our pension in comparison? So this is another
yeah, just
option.
Gives, yeah, I don't know what started, who I did not.
Yeah. Why I didn't know that anyone from Sussex asked to have this done
no.
for our paramedics, but obviously it's statewide, so it would affect any of them. And I'm curious if there's other counties or municipalities that their plan isn't such that they find it attractive, so joining the state plan would be an attractive
yeah.
option.
I agree.
So really the only benefits to the paramedics would be they would get a little more if they work past 25 years.
That's correct.
And the disability, the formula, what do we give half for disability?
Yes, and I don't know the exact formula. I just know
so
that it's
a little bit,
they get a little bit more.
Disability.
It's a little richer. The other option, which
well,
is
we
the...
we have long-term disability too, right?
Yes, we do. We do. It's just their disability plan seems to be, but according to our actuary, they looked at their plan. Their plan is a little bit stronger than ours. The no buy-in is the other option where our assets stay with us, and then they could just move right onto the state plan from us. The problem I see there is they're starting at year zero. So if they come off the plan today, they've already have 30 years here. They don't get much of a benefit by moving to the state plan because they have to start all over again. So they'd have to have 30 years here, 30 years there, you know, or however, you know, that's the extreme case, 8 years here and so much
and
before you get that.
We don't get credit for each other's years of service anymore.
No, we would freeze. We would have to look into freezing our pension.
Right.
You get what you have right now, and then now you can just go to the state's plan. From a county perspective, their benefits might be better. We have the option to change the county's pension to mock the way the state is. To put our employees on another person's plan that they manage, I don't feel is a great idea. I like that we have a committee here that we invest in our assets and we have control on it, that if the state makes some decisions that we don't agree on, they're going to tell us we have to contribute more money.
If I understand this right, so another option would be just allow the paramedics to, after they hit 25 years with the county, if they want to continue working, they could jump on the state plan. If they work five more years, then they get a state pension.
They wouldn't qualify, would they?
Right, we would have to freeze our plan as of today, and then they would start. We can't just say, you work 25 years, and then you can go to the state now.
Oh, I see.
We shut it off, right, exactly,
yeah,
and then you go.
In 5 years with the state, they may not qualify for pension. I don't know how they would determine.
Right, exactly.
If they would recognize service with the county or not. I mean, well, I don't see why they would do that, because that would hurt them.
Right, they would.
You know,
right.
Create a larger payout.
Looks like not, from their standpoint, looks like not a whole lot of benefit for a lot more money for them and for us.
It's correct.
Well, they're going to be hit with 7%. I mean,
yeah, ooh.
And it's very expensive buy-in from both sides.
Yeah.
So my plan is moving forward is release this information to the medics so that they have it. If they have any concerns or want us to look into it deeper from a pension committee standpoint, we will. But at this point, the numbers are not favorable for us to move forward. Everybody okay?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Any questions?
No.
All right. Next item is additional business. Does anybody have any additional business?
No.
Okay. Can I get a motion to adjourn?
Make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
I have a motion to adjourn from Mr. James and a second by Mr. Lawson. I'll take a vote. Mr. James?
Yes.
Mr. Lawson?
Yes.
Mr. Baker?
Yes.
I vote yes. We are adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.